Hello, I'm Maria Titizian.
And I'm Rubina Margosyan, and this is The Week in Review.
Every week, we bring you the stories shaping Armenia and the region.
From politics and policy to social issues and conflict, we break down the news and what it means for you.
This week in the news, Armenians around the world commemorate the 110th anniversary of the Armenian genocide. U.S. President Donald Trump refrains from using the word genocide, but says he looks forward to continuing our strategic partnership with Armenia in his annual message. And Azerbaijan continues to maintain tension on the border. These stories and more in our weekly roundup of the news.
On April 24, Armenians across the world commemorated the 110th anniversary of the Armenian Genocide. In his annual message, Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan underscored that a developed, sovereign, and a secure Republic of Armenia, with clearly demarcated and internationally recognized borders, is the most fulfilling tribute to the victims of 1915. He added that peace, normal relations with neighbors, open borders, and the protection of all citizens are essential to preserving the memory of those who perished. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs echoed this sentiment, stating that while the nation remembers its past, it remains focused on building a future rooted in tolerance, human rights, and lasting peace. The ministry also recalled that the horrors of 1915 helped lay the groundwork for the legal definition of genocide enshrined in the 1948 UN Convention, yet it noted such atrocities continue into the present, fueled by hatred, racism, and ethnic intolerance. Armenia, it stressed, remains committed to global efforts aimed at early warning, rapid response, and prevention. In 2015, Armenia led the successful push to designate December 9 as the UN's International Day of Commemoration and Dignity of Genocide Victims and the Prevention of this Crime. Most recently, in April of 2024, the UN Human Rights Council adopted by consensus a resolution on genocide prevention submitted by Armenia. These efforts aim to turn the vow of never again into meaningful, sustained action, said the statement.
Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan has condemned the burning of the Turkish and Azerbaijani flags, calling the act irresponsible and unacceptable. Every year on April 23, this is the eve of Armenian Genocide Remembrance Day, thousands in Yerevan participate in a torchlight procession from Republic Square to Dizernagapert, where the genocide memorial is located. And each year before the march, participants burn the flags of Turkey and Azerbaijan as a symbolic act of protest. Pashinyan's spokesperson noted that the burning of the flags, or a flag of an internationally recognized state, particularly those of neighboring countries, is a provocative and inflammatory gesture that cannot be viewed any other way by a head of state. And this is a conversation that happens every year, Rubina. I mean, for as long as I can remember, on April 23, during the procession, just before the procession, flags are burned, and there are people who are in favor of it, people who are opposed to it. And it's just one of those unending controversies, if you will.
And another thing that's always happens on April 24, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan this year as well did not break the tradition and again send a message expressing sympathy for the losses of life and the suffering by Ottoman Armenians during World War I. In his message to the Armenian Patriarch in Istanbul, he extended his heartfelt greetings to the esteemed members of the Armenian community, emphasizing that he once again respectfully commemorates the Ottoman Armenians who lost their lives under the challenging conditions of World War I and extends his condolences to their descendants. According to Erdogan, those challenging conditions included rebellions, increasing gang activities, acts of subversion carried out by armed groups, and epidemics during the World War years, corresponding to the final period of the Ottoman Empire. Erdogan also spoke of the necessity to build a future together, as 86 million people, believing that the sorrowful memories of the past should not imprison the present and the future. He added that those who have tried to create hostility from history and weaken the deep and strong bonds between communities have not succeeded in their aims.
It's interesting, right, how the message every year is more or less the same, but that he expresses sorrow, but at the same time said it's because of rebellions, alluding to Armenian uprisings.
And also pandemics and uprisings and gangs. And World War. Why does he bother to do this at all?
I And speaking of presidential addresses, U.S. President Donald Trump also released a statement on April 24, commemorating the Metz-Yeren, which is what we call it sometimes in Armenian, but he paid tribute to what he called the wonderful souls. He always likes to use this word, huh? Wonderful. The wonderful souls who suffered in one of the worst disasters of the 20th century. His choice of words marked a departure from recent presidential language. Since the U.S. formally recognized the Armenian genocide in 2021 under President Biden, the term genocide has been used explicitly in each annual April 24 message. And also the U.S. Embassy in Armenia changed its language this year. They did not use the word genocide, where last year they had. So with the change of administration and the change of position comes, you know, it's trickles down to the embassy. Yeah. In his statement, President Trump reaffirmed his administration's commitment to protecting religious freedom and vulnerable minorities. He also said that the U.S. looks forward to continuing its strategic partnership with Armenia and promoting regional stability.
And earlier this week, the opposition Armenia Alliance introduced a bill in parliament that would criminalize the denial of the Armenian genocide. While Armenian law already criminalizes the denial of all genocides, the opposition argued that there should be specific emphasis on the Armenian genocide itself. They also insisted that genocide denial should be prosecuted regardless of motive, not only when it's intended to incite hatred or violence. Under the current law, the public denial, justification, promotion, or minimalization of genocide or crimes against humanity is punishable if it's done on the basis of race, ethnicity, or a religion, and with the intent to incite hatred or violence. The debate over the bill quickly escalated into a physical confrontation in parliament after tense verbal exchanges and accusations of genocide denial. An altercation broke out on the floor, forcing the speaker to briefly suspend the session.
Yeah, and we this looked is at one the footage. Which,
and the discussion is, I don't know where this is leading and mm-hmm. how it's more kind of like a theater rather than anything else, because sure. all genocide denial mm-hmm. is criminalized in Armenia. And to introduce a bill that specifically mm-hmm. Speaks about the Armenian genocide and in Armenia, it's almost self-negating, saying there we believe some of us might deny it.
Well, you know, I think this is all stemming from the fact that when Pashinyan was where, I think he was in Switzerland or Sweden, he said something about the genocide, and the opposition forces in the country said, oh, he's denying the Armenian genocide. And he's saying, I'm not denying the genocide. I'm saying that it was used as a political tool and so on. And so, of course, this, like you said, it's a theater of the absurd at this point. And you said something earlier before we started this podcast. It's like a kindergarten at times, because they're just, you know, accusations against the ARF for denying the genocide in 1918, for Alain Simonian for saying something. And it's just...
Yeah, both sides accused yeah. one another of denying the genocide yeah. at this point, which is completely absurd.
It really is.
I didn't think my comment that our parliament is a kindergarten would make it into this podcast.
But it though. Did. So there you go. And in other news, Azerbaijan continues to maintain tension along the state border with Armenia. On April 23, Armenia's defense ministry reported that Azerbaijani armed forces opened fire toward the village of Khosnavar in the Sunik region, damaging a house. There were no casualties, thankfully. A similar incident took place on Easter Sunday, on April 20, when the same village came under fire. This time, a solar water heater on the roof of one of the homes was damaged. The ministry once again called on Azerbaijan to investigate the shelling of civilian property in Khosnavar and to issue a public explanation. It also reiterated that Yerevan has proposed to create a joint Armenia-Azerbaijan mechanism to investigate ceasefire violations or related reports, an initiative which Baku has yet to respond to. Meanwhile, the European Union Monitoring Mission, the EUMA, reported that over the Easter weekend, its observers conducted 27 patrols, both day and night, in areas including Khosnavar, Khenadzakh, and Aravuz. In Khosnavar, the mission confirmed damage to civilian infrastructure from two shots, possibly... This is a quote, possibly fired from an Azerbaijani position nearby. So This has been going on for weeks now, and let's see where this is all going to lead us.
And however, Parliament Speaker Alan Simonian told reporters this week that he held a brief conversation with his Azerbaijani counterpart on the sidelines of the CIS summit in St. Petersburg and noted that in his view, negotiations with Azerbaijan are not at a deadlock and discussions are continuing. He emphasized that the likelihood of war will not increase in any way. He added that it is also in Azerbaijan's interest for the process to be concluded quickly. Meanwhile, Deputy Prime Minister Meher Grigoryan, who also serves as the chairman of Armenia's Border Commission handling delimitation and demarcation discussions with Azerbaijan, told Armen Press that Armenia and Azerbaijan continue to exchange opinions and proposals regarding the next phase of the border delimitation process. Grigoryan clarified that while a date for the next meeting of the Border Commissions has not been set, both sides continue to discuss the organization of the next phase of the delimitation work. In May of 2024, Armenia and Azerbaijan successfully delimited a 12-kilometer section of the northern border. The two sides have agreed to continue the demarcation process from the northern point where the Armenian, Georgian, and Azerbaijani borders meet, although no practical steps have yet been taken.
Speaking of practical steps, if our listeners will recall, several weeks ago, Azerbaijan and Armenia announced that they had concluded negotiations on a peace treaty, but there has been no talk of that as yet. Although Armenia keeps pushing the peace agenda, Baku has yet to sign that treaty. And speaking of Baku, the trials of former Artsakh officials continue in Azerbaijan. As we've previously noted, international lawyers are not permitted to represent the accused in Baku, and the proceedings are only being covered by Azerbaijani state-affiliated media outlets. This week, former Artsakh Foreign Minister David Babayan released an audio message through his family. In it, he said Azerbaijani media had misrepresented his statements about the 1992 events in Khojalu. According to Babayan, they presented the complete opposite of what he actually had said, misrepresenting his words entirely. He clarified that he had stated the Azerbaijani side was responsible for those events, describing them as the result of internal political struggles. He also denied claims that he had said there was a reward for the, quote, liberation of Khojalu, calling that another misrepresentation. Babayan said he plans to address these inaccuracies during his next court appearance. Azerbaijani media, meanwhile, claimed Babayan has said that those who wanted to resolve the issue by force achieved their goals and that various groups participated in the operation. They also alleged he confirmed the existence of a medal for the liberation of Khojalu and reported that he failed to answer questions from a so-called victim. That person reportedly asked why civilians weren't allowed to leave through the humanitarian corridor the Armenian side claims existed or that they had provided during the attack. According to the reports, Babayan responded, "How can one justify what was done to children and civilians? This is barbarism." In his audio message, Babayan urged the public not to worry, saying everything was fine. He emphasized that he and the others were being treated well in detention and had not faced hostility from anyone. Court sessions, he said, sometimes get intense, but remain within civilized bounds. And that was the week. We didn't have much news going on in that respect. But as always, we'll talk about the articles we published this week and one we did publish on April 24 called The Armenian Genocide Between Diplomatic Pragmatism and Moral Obligation. It's written by our staff writer Hovhannes Nazaretyan, and he looks at all four post-independence administrations in Armenia and how they dealt with the genocide issue as part or not part of their foreign policy. So there's, they always have to navigate this tension between the pursuit of international recognition of the genocide while maintaining diplomatic pragmatism, especially in relation to Turkey, diasporan expectations, and foreign policy priorities since independence.
And you'd be surprised when you read it and things are put more clearly into perspective,
right,
that it's more or less the same with all the administrations.
Yeah, the genocide, the pursuit of the genocide recognition is never put as a precondition to establishing relations with Turkey or opening of the border.
We also published two book reviews. One is only in Armenian, unfortunately, yeah. And we just published it today. Let me speak about the Armenian one very sure. Briefly, even though we usually don't mention.
It's beautiful.
It's Gemafin Gasparyan's. He's a fellow editor, journalist of Moon TV. He published a book of poetry. It's called A History of Defeat. It's actually very powerful work.
And he also participated in the war.
In the war, and it's a very accurate and honest account account of, and it's just done little, you know, with humor, with sometimes
cynicism,
everything that we feel every day. Unfortunately, it's only in Armenian, and we don't know how to translate poetry properly.
Yeah,
so
because I was looking at some of the poems today, Rubina. You had the book, you brought it to the office, and I was thinking, could this be translated and it still keep the essence of what he's trying to say? And one of the ones that I really liked is they ask, it's a conversation. What have you done today? I've written
a
status on Facebook. What did you want to do? I wrote a status on Facebook, and it's almost poking at our own,
layers and layers of weaknesses. Well, and the other book review is by Ani Bogosyan. It's called The Guest Who Stayed, Rasmus Cembek's Last Dispatch from Artsakh. The book is called I Die Slowly Every Day. It's by a Swedish journalist, Rasmus Cembek, who offers a rare intimate account from Artsakh before its ethnic cleansing. It's a powerful testament to memory, resistance, and the journalist's role amid silence and political erasure. And it's also accompanied, both these books are accompanied by powerful visuals. Rasmus's book has Arek Balayan's photography in it, documentary photography, and also Gemafin's book has very powerful illustrations by David Kochmus.
Yeah, they're both fantastic. And this last one was written by Ani Bogosyan. She's just sort of joined us as a new writer here at EVN Report. And we also published a long-suffering piece, if you will, by Margarita Ghazaryan. It's a review of an exhibition called Women, Peace, Art, Breaking or Reinforcing Stereotypes. And it was an exhibition that showcased 8 female artists who tried to address the concept of peace amid, you know, war. And she says that while it was ambitious, the exhibition really struggled with essentialist portrayals of women, often reinforcing stereotypes instead of challenging them. And it got a lot of responses.
And you know,
actually,
the first time I was reading the piece, I was like, okay, maybe the next artist has not fallen into the stereotypical narrative of trap of womanhood or what women. And then you see that all of them, including the curator, according to, Margarita Ghazaryan's viewpoint, have all fallen into the same narratives and trap, and kind of makes you anxious about how we see ourselves sometimes as in society.
Indeed.
And the 7-year restoration of the Mother Sea, it's another article.
Another long suffering
article that we initially had when the cathedral reopened after the renovations, but we managed to publish it just now.
It was an interesting read for me, to be honest, because it looked at sort of the nuances, the intricacies of what it means to restore a cathedral that is that old, and how, you know, certain parts of the building were being held together precariously by plaster, and the frescoes had to be redone, and there was like an apricot tree sprouting from the bell tower.
And what started
just
like cutting off the vegetation turned into a 7-year restoration project.
Yeah.
Also with the, you know, Muron ceremony being postponed several times due to the wars
and pandemic,
and eventually it came together, even though we haven't gone and seen.
There's a lot of things we haven't done, Rubina.
Yes.
One of these things.
And as we usually do once a month, we put the month's articles in one issue.
And we call Month on View.
Month on View. This time it was March on View. Mm-hmm. And it's, again, a nice way to look back and see what had happened during the month, what were the important subjects, and all the discussions we tried to have with our readers.
Right. And hopefully continue those discussions. And that's the kind of week we had here in Armenia. Thank you for listening. Have a safe and peaceful weekend. And we will be back again next week.